seems to know I'm exclusively yours. Knowing this, I feel but one way. You will understand it too, in these words that I say. I'll close my eyes to everyone but you, and when I do, I'll see you standing there. I'll lock my heart to any other caress. I'll never say yes to a new love affair. Then I'll close my eyes to everything that's gay. If you are not there, to share each lovely day.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And hello and welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at kuci.org. And we're on iTunes. If you go to iTunes, go to radio, go to Talk News, you'll find KUCI right there. And so you can find us many ways. We also podcast the show. And to find that, you can go to my website, penonfire.com, click on the radio tower. It'll take you to the radio page. And from there, you can reach a zillion podcasts. Well, at least 400, I think, at this point. Free any time of day. It's your own personal MFA program, I like to say. Anyway, we're here today with my guest, Michael Zadorian. He's the author of Secondhand and the Lost Tiki Palaces of Detroit Stories. And his most recent book is The Leisure Seeker, and was published by Harper. Let's bring him on. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Barbara. How are you?
Great. Great to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about The Leisure Seeker and how the book came about.
Well, it actually happened, it started about 10 years ago. I had written a short story called Mystery Spot, and about an older couple who really just sort of take off. They kind of kidnap themselves and really just sort of take it on the lam. Down the road, they decide to go on sort of a final trip, a final vacation to Disneyland, actually, and it was only a 10-page story, but I was always pretty pleased with it, and it wound up getting published in a European journal, and in the story, the couple kind of get a glimpse at their not too distant future, what's ahead for them, and it's not particularly good, but. Anyways, I was pleased with this story, and it got published, and I kind of forgot about it. And about 5 years ago, right after my father passed away, I sort of found myself returning to that story, just kind of looking for my next thing to work on. And I really felt myself kind of attracted back to that story. And, even though it was only a 10-page story, I kind of felt like I knew I could make something bigger out of it, and I just started writing it, and it wasn't really long before I realized that in a lot of ways I was kind of writing about what my family had just been through with my father. My father had Alzheimer's disease, and I think it was. I'm not really one to start writing about things immediately after I have some sort of experience, but that's sort of the way things kind of happen with the book. And I think it was sort of inspired by a lot of what I had been through with my family, and also actually a lot of my childhood too. We did a lot of camping and such in a little tent trailer, and I think that influenced it a lot too. So that's really where the book started, and I just took off from there, and it was kind of an experiment for me to see, I wanted to try and write something. I gave myself real strict sort of like, okay, you need to write 3 pages a day exactly, so it was an experiment in that way too, but. So I really I got through with about 3 or 4 drafts in a year's time, and then I wanted to be done after a year, but it really didn't turn out that way. I wound up working on the book for another year and a half after that, but I knew where it was heading, and so that's really sort of the genesis of the book right there in a nutshell.
Well, so many questions I now have from that response, and one of them is you said you originally wrote a short story that was published in a European journal. Now, how did it come to be published in a European journal?
Well, that's a darn good question. I found myself at the time, I was sending stories out to a lot of different journals, and sometimes I think I just ran into a couple. There was one that comes to mind, Paris Transcontinental, and a lot of them were run by kind of expatriates. So, I think I probably found out about them in the back of Poets and Writers or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to give these guys a try, too. And, it wasn't that much harder. Just throw in some sort of international postage thing along with your self-addressed stamped envelope, And, I wound up having actually pretty good luck with a lot of those European journals. And I think it was kind of helpful for me, too. And certainly not to underplay the value of, when someone looks at your qualifications, where you've been published or whatever, and seeing something in Europe, we're Americans. we love that. We're impressed by that. And, so I think that actually helped me. And, so they wound up, they were the first people to publish, that story, Mystery Spot. And that actually ultimately wound up in my story collection, many years later.
Interesting. So you write short stories and you write long form. You write novels.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference for you?
Well, I think with a novel, I find myself once I find my way into something, it's actually a lot more secure feeling for me. It's nice to have something to come back to day after day after day. I mean, it's also possible that I will, I'll wind up, writing 100 pages and then just deciding that it's crap. And, you know, and just sort of like, you know, saying, okay, well, that was a complete and utter waste of time. And but that seems to be my way into novels. I really just have to write and write and write and see where things, see where, you know, see how it works. And I don't tend to outline terribly well. Hopefully, I have. After a while, I get a sense of where I want the book to end. But generally, it's you know, I just throw myself into it and hope for the best. And with stories, although I do like that, it's sometimes when I feel like I really need to accomplish something and finish something, a story is the perfect thing because, you know, maybe I'm not particularly fast with stories either, but it's a way to at least get something done, and you know, maybe I can be done with a story in 3 weeks or a month or something like that, and I'll feel like, okay, you know, hey, I accomplished something, yay, as opposed to a novel, which is like, okay, I've only got another year and a half to go. And so that's what's nice about stories for me. But then again, then Once I'm done, I have to sit there and, you know, pound my head against the desk for another couple of weeks trying to figure out, okay, what about the next story? And so they both have their own sort of advantages and disadvantages, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm here this morning with Michael Zadorian. His novel is called The Leisure Seeker, published by Harper. And this would be a great time for you to read. Could you read a bit from the intro?
Sure. Let me just bring this up here. The book is actually 10 chapters, each a different state, 8 of which are the 8 states of Route 66, which is the route they take, you know, from heading from Detroit to California, ending up in actually Santa Monica. But this part is from the very beginning of the book, which takes place in Michigan. Michigan, we are tourists. I've recently come to terms with this. My husband and I were never the kind who traveled to expand our minds. We traveled to have fun. Wickiewaukee, Gatlinburg, south of the border, Lake George, Rock City, Waldrug. We've seen swimming pigs and horses, a Russian palace covered with corn, young girls underwater drinking Pepsi-Cola from the 7-ounce bottle, London Bridge in the middle of a desert, a cycling cockatoo riding a tightrope. I guess we always knew. This, our last trip, was appropriately planned at the last minute, the luxury of the retiree. It is one that I'm glad I decided we take, although everybody, doctors, children, forbade us to go. I strongly, strongly advise against any type of travel, Ella, said Dr. Tomaszewski, one of the seemingly hundreds of physicians currently attending to me, when I hinted that my husband and I might take a trip. When I casually mentioned the idea of even a weekend getaway to my daughter, she used a tone that one would normally reserve for a disobedient puppy. No. But John and I needed a vacation, more than we've ever needed one before. Besides, the doctors only want me to stay around so they can run their tests on me, poke me with their icy instruments, spot shadows inside of me. They've already done plenty of that. And while the children are only concerned with our well-being, it's still really none of their business. Durable power of attorney doesn't mean you get to run the whole show. You yourself might ask, is this the best idea? 2 down-on-their-luck geezers, one with more health problems than a third-world country, the other so senile that he doesn't even know what day it is, taking a cross-country road trip? Don't be stupid. Of course it's not a good idea. There's a story about Mr. Ambrose Bierce, whose scary tales I enjoyed as a young girl, decided when he got to his 70s that he would simply shove off to Mexico. He wrote, "Naturally, it is possible, even probable, that I shall not return, these being strange countries in which things happen." He also wrote, "It beats old age, disease, or falling down the cellar stairs." Speaking as someone who is acquainted with all 3 of those, I hardly agree with old Ambrose. Put simply, we had nothing to lose, so I decided to take action. Our little leisure seeker camper van was packed and ready. We have kept it that way ever since retirement. So after assuring my children that a vacation was indeed out of the question, I kidnapped my husband, John, and we stole off, headed for Disneyland. That's where we took the kids, so we like it better than the other one. After all, at this point in our lives, we are more like children than ever, especially John.
Thank you so much. That was Michael Zadorian reading from The Leisure Seeker, published by Harper. One thing I like about this book is there's more than one. There's quite a few, actually. But one is the voice, and that I think in hearing about a story or a novel about an older couple taking a road trip, one has Alzheimer's, the other is ill, you think, oh, how downbeat. And your voice, I mean, it's so charming. It's so funny. The voice is light. There's bittersweet moments, and certainly what's going on is wound through the book, but it's not what you might expect. And I've been curious about your reactions to the book, especially initially.
I think it has been very interesting too. I think when I was trying to get a literary agent, actually, I think a lot of them were a little turned off by the idea of here's a story about a pair of 80-year-olds, both ailing and they hop in their RV and go for a road trip. I think right off the bat that sort of turned some people off from it, and consequently, it took me a while to find a great agent, but luckily I did, and she seemed to really understand that what the book was about, and also the fact that there would probably be an audience for this book too. But I think initially a lot of people are kind of, you know, they look at what the book is about and they think, oh, this sounds like, you know, wow, this really sounds like a downer. And I guess for me, humor is important. I think in all my work, I always try to bring some humor to whatever it is I'm writing. And it was particularly important for this because I kind of knew firsthand how bleak some of the subject matter could be. And with John and Ella, I also wanted them to be one of those couples who sort of were able, their marriage worked, they were able to stay together for so long because they could kind of, you know, make each other laugh. And I think that seemed very important and a way to fit some of that humor into the book. So a lot of times people are very surprised at how funny the book is, which makes me happy. You know, I'm glad, but I do think some people do avoid the book because they just ostensibly it seems like it's going to be a drag. But once they read it, I've had a lot of people say, "Oh my God, I've had a lot of children passing it on to their parents, their older parents, and parents passing it on to their kids, so it's been really nice in that regard. But I do think it's been a bit of an obstacle that the book has had to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you say, you know, people expected it to be a downer, and so much, I mean, I suppose any topic actually can be a downer, and any topic you can give your own spin and, you know, your own sort of singular voice and take on it and make it something so completely different than what a reader will expect or what an agent will expect, you know?
Absolutely. That was one of the things. I mean, I'm not always entirely aware of things while I'm writing them, but some people have sort of pointed out, I mean, pretty early in the process that in a lot of ways the book was kind of a road novel, but it's kind of a, I don't know, whatever, subversion of the standard American road novel, which seems to be so often, you know, young people off, you know, in search of America and in search of their selves, and you know, and in, you know, this book is two people who are on the road, but you know, who are kind of know themselves all too well, and they certainly are searching for something, and it is really very much a type of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also part of the you know, the road novel, you know, kind of idiom, but it's in other ways it's very, very different. You know, it's not you know, yeah, it's not, you know, people in their 20s or 30s and you know, it's two people in their 80s, but they're still kind of seeking something.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned your agent, and your agent is also now my agent, Sally Van Heitsma, which is how...
What a coincidence.
Well, actually, that's how your book came to me, because I met with her, you know, I think I told you, I met with her about a month or more ago, and she handed me your book, and she just said, this is just one of the best books you have got to... And, you know, it was just wonderful to have an agent promote a client, you know, I mean, to just, with her heart, you know, promote.
Uh-huh, to another client, too, yes.
Yeah, and I just, I mean, I love that. And, but, you know, finding the right agent can really be, I think, just this seemingly insurmountable challenge for new writers or for writers who are looking to change agents. What do you suggest? I mean, you know, do you feel like it's something you go with your gut, or, you know, in terms of personality, or do, you know, when an agent gets what you're trying to do, or what is it for you?
I think it's definitely that finding someone who really gets you. And with this book, I probably contacted 35 to 40 different agents, and just to try and interest them in the manuscript, which was done essentially. And I mean, and this was at a point between, you know, I had another novel published. My book Second Hand was published by Norton. So I mean, this was, I mean, I thought it wouldn't be a huge operation trying to get a new agent. But it kind of turned out to be. I was, by the time, you know, Sally and I found each other, I was actually getting really pretty discouraged. Because I don't know if part of it was, you know, I think, I don't know. I do think, you know, there was some, you know, a lot of younger agents that I contacted. I think they may have been a little put off by the subject matter as well. Getting back to what we were talking about before, you know, I think it's possible that, you know, 20 and 30 something Manhattan literary agents may not be necessarily interested in a book about two 80-year-olds from the Midwest, but that's just a, you know, I'm just throwing that out there. So it was really, I had a literary agent for my first book, and, you know, and basically things just, there were 9 years between my first and second novel, so that's certainly not what I had planned, and, you know, and things, you know, basically kind of went a little bit south with my first agent, and I really, at the time when I was trying to get The Leisure Seeker, you know, out there into the hands of some publishers, I was, I was really starting from, you know, the beginning again. That's how it felt. And I didn't have an agent, I didn't have an editor, no publisher. And so it was a battle. And I hate to sound all discouraging to anyone out there who's like trying to get an agent, but it really did very much come down to finding someone who you know, who appreciated the work, who got it. And as soon as I met, you know, I spoke to Sally, I mean, just a quick conversation revealed that she absolutely got what the book was about, and she, you know, liked my writing, and it, frankly, that just didn't happen all that often. I mean, you think, you know, you like to think that there's going to be somebody who like that out there, but it's difficult. I think it's really hard, and I would almost rather spend that extra time and find that someone I really connect with, rather than basically just someone who, you know, thinks they can, okay, I can sell this, and, you know, and they're not thinking about the long run and a career or anything. They're just thinking, okay, I can sell this book for this guy, and I'm so happy I have somebody who, you know, I feel like, you know, is, you know, we're a team. And that, to me, is the thing to go for, and that's really what I felt with Sally.
Yeah, you know, it's true. A lot of writers I talk to are very sort of focused on New York and focused on getting a New York mm-hmm. agent or an agent with a huge agency, and that sounds very impressive. But, you know, when I was in transition recently and looking around and talking to different agents, I really wanted to focus on someone who got what I was doing and you know, actually a small agency who with an agent who would, you know, have time too.
Absolutely.
I mean, sometimes those big agencies have so many clients that if your book does excellently right out the gate, then you're in luck. But if not, most likely you're going to be kind of shoved to the bottom of the list. And I don't know that writers think that way. I think it's just like, oh, ICM wants me, or oh, I have this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway.
I absolutely agree. I really think there's the chance of that happening. You know, there's, I think, so many people, you know, probably writers, agents, editors, everybody that are looking for some sort of big score. And, you know, and things don't always happen that way. And so it's really nice I think especially in these days in you know, the rise of independent music and publishing and everything, I think it's important to, you have to realize that, I don't know, I feel like that, you know, I want to have some significance within, you know, a literary agency. I don't have to be some sort of top client or anything like that, but I want, eventually, you know, would like somebody to pay some attention to what I'm trying to do and, you know, do some work. And if I don't wind up having some sort of hit, you know, book, I'd still like to continue writing and have a career of some sort. And mm-hmm. there's so many writers out there that, you know, I guess the term is mid-list authors or whatever, and, you know, that maybe we're going to have something that makes a big splash out there in the marketplace. Maybe we're not, but, you know, that doesn't lessen, you know, diminish our work and, you know, the importance of it. And so I think this is, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel like this is a good time for that sort of thing, the small agency? I mean, I kind of feel like it is, but I'm isolated.
Well, I do too. I mean, I think, you know, I think everything is sort of, while everything is going bigger and more sort of more technology everywhere, we're also, you know, going smaller in so many mm-hmm. ways, right? I mean,
yes.
the big house is being replaced by the small house and a lot of communities and all the bigness is sort of, you know, replaced by smallness. And I would much rather have, you know, a smaller agency with an agent who, you know, I was in touch with, as opposed to a big name agency that I'm a, you know, one more person.
Right. So, it's nice to have your calls returned.
Yeah, that's real nice. So, yeah, I mean, I think so. I think, you know, so many of us are just appreciating something else these days. But, you know, your book has been successful, and it's apparently been optioned for film. And I want to take a short break now, but I want to come back and talk more about all this. So all of you out there, stay with us. We will be right back with more Michael Zadorian. His book is The Leisure Seeker. So don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Be gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
And you don't hear none of those stations playing them. Ask why. In fact, where are those stations today? Somebody better ask somebody that. The people that's most affected by this war.
From animal rights and the anti-war movement to civil disobedience and culture jamming, Justice or Just Us examines law, equality, public policy, and social activism. Tune in Thursdays 8 to 9 a.m. on KUCI in Irvine and KUCI.org.
Yeah, the dirt on publishing, writers, authors, all of it. Listen.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM, broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org and on iTunes under Talk News Radio. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and today remains Wednesday, March 31st, 2010. And I just remember when it was New Year's, the year 2000. Somehow that just seems like yesterday, sitting in my ear. Indian restaurant on PCH here in Orange County, just watching the silvery, purpley confetti. It was just yesterday, okay? 2010, how'd that happen? Anyway, my guest has been Michael Zadorian. His book is The Leisure Seeker, and it's published by Harper. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Barbara.
You know, you have some great reviews, some great blurbs. Elmore Leonard said, Zadorian's pace is deceptive. It's restful, but unexpected scenes jump out at you. Come to the end and you'll say, oh, my God. Now, that's a pretty cool blurb.
It is a pretty cool blurb. That was very, very kind of Elmore to do that. Do you want to know how
yeah,
I got the blurb?
Sure, let's hear.
Actually, I used to work with his son-in-law, and we're good friends. And I found out the book was going to be published, and I had some pre-publication copies of it. I called up my friend Jim Dudley and asked if it's hard with Elmore because he's very, he's always writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just lucked out and got him in between books, and he had some time. And I just, you know, and my friend said, I can't make any promises. And I said, of course, I'm completely aware of that. But, you know, and so he got it to Elmore, and, you know, Elmore liked it and wrote that blurb for it. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I think you wind up having to be, I'm still working on, but you almost have to be in your... out there in the world, as a writer, there has to be a certain shamelessness. And it's like you can't be afraid to just ask people if they will, hey, you know someone, would you hand it off to them? And sometimes I'm not very good at it, and then other times I can be a little bolder, and it often pays off. It's amazing. But
yeah.
So yeah, it was a weird thing with Elmore, because he had done a blurb for my first book too. So I'm done going to that well, though. No more.
yeah. Well, and the book apparently has been optioned for film.
Yes, that's true. Well, it was an interesting thing too, because when the book got accepted for publication by William Morrow, who did the hardcover, basically at the time they had a situation, you know, a kind of an offshoot company that basically got first look at all the various HarperCollins, William Morrow sort of, you know, properties, I guess. My editor, she was so enthusiastic about it. She put it in the hands of the person who was in charge of the office, and he, you know, he was as enthusiastic about it as she was, and so ultimately, the film option was sort of part of my book publication contract, which was pretty rare, kind of actually even unheard of. So it was a kind of simultaneous, you know, publication and option sort of deal, which was pretty exciting, actually.
That is very exciting. Gosh, I mean,
yeah,
because you're quite humble about this book and its success.
it's a strange thing. I think it's done pretty well, actually, and I always, you know, I never am sure, you know, what, you know, I try not to pay too much attention out there to the actual book business and everything. But I think the book has done well, and that's been a nice thing too. We'll see what happens with the film option. It would be great if something got made, actually, a director sort of attached himself to it, or was attached, or whatever the terminology is, like a really nice independent filmmaker. And so we'll see what happens. He worked on a script, and so as far as I know, the book is making the rounds, or the script is making the rounds now, and we have our fingers crossed.
Excellent. Talk about Route 66 and why Route 66 and the research that you undertook to have that be authentic.
Well, it was that was something I think I had been interested in for a long time. Just the whole, you know, myth and lore of Route 66. I had on some of those road trips with my parents as a child, I think I did travel, you know, bits and pieces of it here and there. But, you know, so I think the road has always held sort of an interest for me, and also the fact that I'm from Detroit, and, you know, car culture is just bred into us. I mean, everything, you know, well, it's not so much that way now, but when I was a child, I mean, everything revolved around the auto industry. So we, you know, I grew up being able to identify automobiles. Like when I was 3 years old, my mother used to tell me I could identify cars. Which is, I got to think that was probably pretty common in Detroit, too. So it was always very interesting to me, Route 66. And when I started writing the book, it wasn't, they weren't taking that route then. But not far into it, I realized this could be, that could be a good road for them to take. And the more I, the further I got with the book, the more I realized that it was the perfect road for them to take. I mean, this sort of beat up, kind of fading, crumbling road, that is, but still filled with history, filled with memories, and of course, not unlike my two characters. And so it wasn't long before I realized this is the perfect road for them to take. And it was just so interesting to me too to just sort of take. There's so much written about Route 66 that it's pretty easy to write cobble together a credible sort of fictional journey, because there's so much written about the road. There's books and magazines and websites and so many photographs, so many maps and things that you can get, that I was actually able to write the book, write the first few drafts, without having taken the trip from, start to finish. But I knew at a certain point that I needed to. And so I think after about the third or fourth draft, probably when I got up to that year point that I wanted to be done by, that I realized, okay, it's time to take the trip. And it worked out great, because my wife and I had always meant to take that journey and to take Route 66, and here was the perfect excuse to do it, under the guise of writerly research.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out to be just an incredible trip. I really count it among the best trips of my life. It was just amazing. I mean, there's just so much there of an America, just these ruins of, an America that no longer exists. And we just went, and I took just hundreds and hundreds of photographs and made some recordings and video, and while it didn't really impact what happened in the book so much, like actual sort of plot of the book,
mm-hmm.
it certainly affected the texture of the book and just the way the sky looked, the people we met, the strange little or the strange big kind of roadside icons that are there all along the journey from Chicago all the way to Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
So it all very much influenced the book, and so I'm so glad that I took the trip, and for personal reasons and for literary ones.
Did you know where you would be staying along the way, or was it a total sort of trip of discovery where you set out and you had a certain period of time and you just wanted to see what would happen?
It was really more the latter. Yeah, mm-hmm. we didn't. I think we had one or two hotels booked here and there just in the first couple of days of the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just winged it from there. We stayed in a concrete teepee in Arizona, and took some little offshoot trips to the Grand Canyon, and it was amazing. But no, we thought it would be better we tried to do the trip sort of like John and Ella did it, which was really to just end up wherever you ended up,
mm-hmm.
and see what happened.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's great. You're listening to Writers on Writing. We have a little bit more time left with Michael Zadorian. His book is The Leisure Seeker, published by Harper. Wanted to talk to you also about writing in the point of view of a woman, because the book is in Ella's point of view, and I know you said early on that your dad was sort of the inspiration for the book. Talk about taking a life experience like that and creating art out of it. How did Ella come to be?
Well, I'm revealing it all here now. I mean, Ella is definitely very much inspired by my mother, and so I know it was something that just felt very, very natural to me. And it wasn't meant to be some sort of like, wow, I'm going to write in the voice of a woman. And you know, some people have said to me that was very very courageous for you to do that. And it's like, that sort of made me nervous to hear people say that. It was just like, no, I don't know, I just felt comfortable writing in the voice of an 80-year-old woman. I'm not sure what that says about me, but it was just one of those things that really just felt right, and I never considered writing the book any other way. I think that just sort of felt very right and comfortable. I definitely owe a debt to my mother, and like with any, you know, fictional work, I mean, after a while, characters take on their own histories, their own personality quirks, and, you know, and it, as the book progressed, you know, the Ella certainly, well, she retained certain, you know, qualities of my mom. You know, she definitely, you know, went off in some directions of her own, and and the same for John too. But you know, they're definitely, I stole some things from all of our lives when I was writing the book.
Well, the voice, it you know, it works so well. I mean, it really does work so well, and you know, it doesn't feel autobiographical at all,
and it's truly not.
Yeah,
really,
yeah, yeah. But know? I mean, you know, I think sometimes writers feel like, you know, they really have to make it up. You know, they have to make it all up, or they're not authentic, or they're not a true fiction writer. And so much of what makes it into novels is the writer's experience.
I absolutely agree. There, you know, I think it's impossible, even if you're writing about something, you know, that is so completely, you know, detached from your actual life. I still think that, the experiences we have, the people we know, the life we've led, how can it not affect what we write? I mean, that's just for me. But it just feels like, you know, I don't feel bad about putting in, you know, things from my life, and invariably things get changed, they get rearranged. It's not, you know, I don't feel like any of my work is terribly, you know, quote unquote autobiographical, but I also feel like most of it is extremely personal, and that's because of, you know, the my experiences and the things I've put in the books that are from my life.
Mm-hmm. You talked a bit earlier about the fact that you don't outline. You said you throw yourself into it and hope for the best. And also, if you end up writing, you know, a certain number of pages, 100 pages, and it's not working, you also feel, you know, free enough to throw them out. Talk about process a little bit, because, again, I'm thinking of writers I know who really feel like if what they're working on does not make it, that somehow, you know, somehow they're either a failure or there's been a great loss, rather than, you know what, I just, I'll go on to what does work.
Right, yeah, I think, it can be, I didn't mean to sound so cavalier when I said I just, you know, throw out the 100 pages. I don't throw it out. I keep it and hope that I will, you know, at some point I can come back to it, or it will make more sense to me later, or maybe that's the basis for a character that I can use in something else. And if you start, if I started thinking about things like, well, that's 3 months of my life completely wasted, I would just probably lock myself in the closet and not come out. But so I always try to feel like, actually, my first novel, Secondhand, I wound up, that was one of those things where I just started writing this character, And again, after about 3 months of writing it every day and loving that character, I just hit a wall, and I did not know what to do with it. And so I really had to put it aside for about 6 months. And I just didn't know what to do. I went off and I worked on some other things, and then finally I wrote another story, and I just thought, you know, this would be an interesting person to meet up with, that, you know, the character from, you know, the book that I had to put away. Mm. And once I did that, when I was a little resistant to it at first, I thought about it and I thought, nah, that's a stupid idea. but I kept going back to it, and ultimately I thought, okay, I'm just going to do this, see what happens when these two become acquainted, and that's really when the book, you know, kind of came alive, and that's when I realized, okay, I do have a book here, and my instincts were right, so all that time wasn't wasted, happily, the pages I wrote, you know, they wound up being, you know, not necessarily in that same order or in that same, you know, arrangement or whatever, but, I used probably most of it, and that was, part of what made up the book, and I was so pleased. I don't think the no outline method is for everyone, and sometimes I'm not even sure it's for me, frankly. But it just seems to be what works here.
And what do you think about? I mean, as authors, there's quite a bit of promo that we have to do these days, and social networking seems to be more and more a part of things. Facebook, Twitter, becoming a presence, building a platform, all that. What's your opinion of that, of promotion, of social networking for authors, etc.?
Well, I think embraced it. Actually, I'm not entirely always. After a while, I'm not entirely sure what to put on these, Facebook and Twitter, and I started a blog, and after a while they do start to feel kind of draining, I think. It's like, okay, how much creative energy am I using up to try and think of a tweet? and it starts to feel like, some of them I've really just kind of embraced as, promotional tools. And when something happens out there, there's a review or somebody writes about any of my books, I put it up there. And at first I worked very hard to try and be entertaining. And then that just got to be like, I can't sleep at night. I got to think of a status update, and then it was like, okay, enough of that. You need to just, put that away for a little while. Yeah. And so I still post things, and if something comes naturally or there's something out there on the book I want people to know about, I'm more than happy to put it out there. And it's really, in a lot of ways, it's been very fun to connect with people who have read the book, and that's the great thing. That is really kind of the cool thing, to find out what's going on out there, and to be a little more connected to the audience. And I know that's a big part of what publishers like too, and that's a part I like of it. I like hearing from people and just getting their take on things and on the book and their stories, and it's. That's actually been a really satisfying part of it, but it does tend to be a bit much sometimes.
Well, I'll have you know that I tweeted about you coming on the show, and I also posted it on Facebook with a link to one of your YouTube videos. So hopefully listeners will at least find that video and find this book, which is a wonderful book,
thanks.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, any advice or any kind of pearls of wisdom for the writers who are listening, who might be,
Sure.
working their way through a novel or a short story?
Yes, I would just say it's such a cliche, but you really, really, really have to be persistent. You just can't give up. I have been to that point twice where I thought, okay, this would probably be the logical place for me to stop doing this. and then I just sort of said, you know, I don't care. I'm going to just continue to do this. And sometimes that point you get to where you stop caring about everything else, everyone else, and you do something that feels right to you. And that is very often the thing that you should be writing and the thing that will resonate with other people.
It's so true. Before my book, Pen on Fire, was published, that year before, I remember feeling so frustrated that things weren't happening the way I thought they should happen. So I was looking into graduate school. I thought, well, finally, I'm going to go to graduate school. That's what I'll do. And I'll, really take myself out of publishing for a while. And that's kind of when my agent sold the book.
You almost really have to get to a point where you stop caring and just sort of to let something happen. And it doesn't mean it's gonna. It just means that the point with this book, I had really arrived at a point where I was like, okay, I don't think anything's going to happen again. I think I'm Johnny One Book. But I'm still going to write. I don't care. Maybe I'll try and pursue some other avenues, and I just kept at it, and very happily, something happened. Actually, the Leisure Seeker was accepted, and the very next day, my story collection was accepted. So that was kind of freakish, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah, well, I'm just so glad, and I wish you continued success.
Well, thank you, Barbara. You too.
Thank you. That was Michael Zadorian. His book is The Leisure Seeker, published by Harper. He has a website, michaelzadorian.com. His last name is spelled Zadorian, michaelzadorian.com. In any case, we're at the end of our hour, and going to leave you now with just a few little tidbits. The Whittier Book Fair is this weekend. I will be on a panel on Saturday there. And next weekend, April 10th, 2010, is Literary Orange here at UC Irvine. I'll also be on a panel for Orange County Noir, an anthology that'll be out in April, in which I have a short story. And you can find those events and more if you go to my blog, which is penonfire.blogspot.com. Scan down just a few posts, and you should find links to those events. April 20th, we have Ron Carlson at our Pen on Fire speaker series. Ron is the author of Ron Carlson Writes a Story, also the author of collections of short stories, novels, young adult novels. He's been on the show a few times. He runs the MFA program here at UC Irvine, and you can find out more about that by going to penonfire.com and click on the speaker series. In any case, I remain Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm going to leave you now. Thank you so much for spending this time with me and with Michael and on the show. And don't forget to pick up a pen and your notebook and get some words down this week, if not the computer or however it is you find it the way to happen for you. Take care.